The Capo and Joe podcast is brought to you by Bold City Heating and Air. Fast and reliable AC service.
Welcome in, Capo and Joe. We are ready to go. We hope that you're tuning in on Facebook Live or wherever you find your podcast. Joe C. from XL Primetime, our head coach, Dave Capo, former Dallas Cowboy head man, many years coordinating defenses, telling people what to do, making better football players out of them, whether it was the college or the pro game. I tell you what, I'm fired up. Now, you admitted something to me earlier today as we begin our podcast. You're pretty fired up about the offseason right now, aren't you?
I am. The thing that fires me up more than anything else is that I've got the same feeling that Doug Peterson has. I'm sick of that last five out of six games, and listen, I want the Jags to be successful. So the one thing I've been able to do with this All 22, this ESPN Plus Premium, is that I've been able to not just look at guys for the draft, but I've been able to watch Atlanta.
Oh yeah,
I've been able to watch some of the free agent guys that we brought in. Mm-hmm. I'm watching ball in the offseason, and it's got me fired up because we're less than a month away from the draft, and it's time to roll here.
Yeah, it really is. The countdown to the draft is on. Yesterday, Monday, was the countdown of 30 days until the NFL draft takes place. And I'm thinking of that old movie Network. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Hey.
And so let's just take you back to the Doug Peterson comment, and we'll start there. And then we'll start looking at some of the things that he said. He was at the NFL owners' meetings. If you're a Jaguar fan, you probably have kept up with most of this. But he said a lot of things. In fact, he had almost 40 sound bites that was touching a lot of different things. But the one thing that he started out with that I think we should start out with as well is the bad taste that he had in his mouth at the collapse in December, when this team was 8-3, they had everything in front of him. And he said, I don't know if I'll be able to get over that. He said, I'm not going to let it cloud my vision, but what happened cannot happen again.
Yeah, well, first of all, he was shocked, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a stab to the heart.
Yeah.
Because he had everyone convinced, players, media, mm-hmm. fans in Jacksonville, the city, was so fired up, and for the first 11 games,
right,
8-3,
mm-hmm.
This team was taking a huge upward trajectory.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, bam, it was like somebody punched him in the chest. And, to lose five out of six, he knew he had a problem in that locker room, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just players. It was something going on in the locker room.
Yeah. And you've been in those locker rooms. You've either smelled or sensed that as a coach, as a head coach. What is it? In other words, this team, and I keep using the Texans game as my litmus test for this last season. I go back 2 years ago when they beat the Tennessee Titans up in Nashville.
Right.
They ended a decade of losing up there. Things changed. They went on a roll. They won six games in a row, claimed the AFC South. This year, I used that Thanksgiving weekend game against the Houston Texans. I said to myself, if they win this game, something special is about to happen again. Well, guess what?
It did. But it went in the wrong direction.
It was so bad after that. That was basically the last game. The last game they won, except against the worst team in the Carolina Panthers. Anyway, how do you can you walk into a locker room and sense that?
I don't know if you can sense it right then, but in the back of your mind as a football coach, you know that it's very difficult. You don't see teams go back-to-back in the Super Bowl, for example.
Right.
It's, the mentality changes when everything's going good, mm-hmm. to the point if you don't have the right competitive culture in your locker room,
right,
you start to feel like, hey, everything's all right no matter what happens. We're going to find a way to get it done. And the way they won that game, I can see where you're coming from, but I can also see where they're coming from the standpoint that, hey, it doesn't matter. We're going to win. We're going to win. It's inevitable. The guy hits the goalposts and we win the game.
True. Talking about the Houston Texans kicker where it doinked back onto the field. So you're saying that you think those guys walked into that locker room, took their cleats off, tossed their jerseys in the laundry basket and said, AFC South's ours.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about playing the next six games.
Absolutely. And I think once you get a, it's just like anything else. When you get winning going, it snowballs. Well, when you get losing going, it can snowball as well. Especially if you don't have the attitude that, hey, we got to get this fixed right now. And again, I'm not in the locker room, but when you look at what happened, transpired at the end of the year,
right?
Okay, after the season's over, I think Doug, if I'm sitting in Doug's shoes, I think he looked at the offense, and I know this is a bunch of excuses, but if I'm looking at it from outside, their offensive line weren't together very often, all five of them.
Right.
They lost Kirk early and Zay Jones banged up early. They lost their starting left tackle for five ball games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because you lost Cam from the Houston game on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then he tried to come back in that last game, but he was gone for five games.
Yeah, I think it was five games. Yeah. But then your quarterback was injured.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting there, he's playing through it, but he's just not executing and to his ability. You can look at that and say, okay, all we need to do is tweak a little bit here and stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
We're okay here. But then you look at the defensive side of the ball, and they just went in the tank for 6 weeks. And that's why he ended up letting go the majority of the defensive staff, because not only is it a culture problem in players, but it's also going to be a culture problem in coaches. If they're not working hard, if they're not doing the things that they need to do, you look at the defensive side of the ball, they were not really hurt with injury other than Tyson Campbell, really, was the only one that, you know, and of course they lost Devon right away. So that was, even when they were winning, that was not a factor.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so he knew he had to make a change then, and that's what he did. He changed the defensive staff, and now he brought in a bunch of guys that have a winning culture in their background.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, and I want to read that a little bit of the soundbite as far as the leaders. But real quick on the question that was asked to Doug on how long it's going to take him to shake off the Titans' loss, he said it's not so much the loss as that individual loss as much it was the last six games.
Right.
While we were sitting there at 8-3, everything in front of us, I don't know if I'll ever get over it. And so then he went on and basically said that's going to be his motivation. He's not going to let it blind him, but that's going to be his motivation. Well, then he was asked about the idea of bringing these players in, guys that come in and can show some leadership. And I do think that's the part that I wanted you to zero in on, because we always use this word culture. Culture can come in a lot of different forms, okay? Did I have a good day? It could be shooting a good golf score. It could be going out with my wife. It could be culture can come in a lot of different forms. And he knew that he needed to get somehow, some way, some leadership, some winning attitude in that locker room. And I think that's what they did, at least that's what they tried to do.
Well, that's what they definitely tried to do with what they've done in free agency. And to me, culture is, look, you have really good culture when you're winning.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy.
Yeah. Everyone's
the culture
along
that you want is competitive culture
mm-hmm.
to where you will not allow bad things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I just saw one this weekend, the Houston Cougar basketball team against Texas A&M. And really, Texas A&M did everything in their power to
played
win that football game.
Yeah.
And Houston lost four guys to fouls, ended up tied at the end, but still won the game in overtime.
Yeah.
And the guys willed their way to winning that football, that basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't have enough guys in the locker room, in my opinion, of those type of guys. Mm-hmm. It was easy when they were winning, but when it started to go, it was a little bit more of, I think we got this. And I'll tell you right now, you bring in guys that you know that have been captains of your football teams, you know that they've got a competitive edge to them or they wouldn't have been a captain. I can promise you, if I was starting a football team today, the guy I would start it with was Michael Irvin.
Okay.
And yeah, Michael Irvin with us with the Cowboys, the guy, everything he ever did, including when he was in the nightclubs, was based on the fact of winning on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Every route he ran, Mm-hmm. It was like it was the last play of the Super Bowl, and he was not going to allow, you know, this is the game winner right here.
Right.
Give me the ball. That's the way he approached it. He had no problem getting after people on the sideline, mm-hmm. including his position coach, yeah. including the head coach. Troy Aikman was the same way.
Yeah.
We had guys that had that competitive culture that would not allow the culture to slip.
Mm-hmm. Let me zero in on the Troy part of this, because Troy Aikman, you may look at him and you view him as, I don't know, a little quiet, a little more concealed, doesn't quite show all of his emotion. Trevor Lawrence, a little quiet. Doesn't quite show all of his emotion. So if Troy can get in someone's ear, chew them out, including giving you some words on the sideline back in the day,
yeah.
I don't want to challenge Trevor and say he doesn't have that, because I do think there's that competitive cat inside him. But don't you think he needs to kind of call on that gene a little bit more?
Well, he definitely begins to become more of a leader, which yeah. he will with experience. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he'll rise to the occasion here.
The Campo and Joe podcast is brought to you by Bold City Heating and Air, fast and reliable AC service.
But challenge guys.
Yeah, oh yeah. But I do think that if it's not going to be him, it's got to be other people in the locker mm-hmm. room. I mean, you know, listen, I know Leon Searcy. Mm-hmm. I was with him at the University of Miami. I know his background. I know where he came from. I know when he went to Pittsburgh, what their mantra was mm-hmm. their culture in their locker room.
Yeah.
I want a bunch of Leon Searcy's running around.
Yeah, it's the truth.
You know, he ain't going to allow anything yeah. to go bad in that locker room, you know.
And it's player policing player.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's not left up to the head coach. So here's another quote from Doug Peterson. And the question was asked on the idea of bringing Eric Armstead in, the defensive lineman from San Francisco. And the question was asked on how important Armstead's leadership skills and accolades are. Doug Peterson, quote, it's huge. Again, that's the reason why you go get guys like that have been there and done it. They're the pinnacle of our sport. And I need guys on our team that have had accolades and awards like that so that you have our guys can see exactly what that looks like. I'm telling you, I think this offseason, Doug Peterson says, hey, Trent, this roster's turning over too much. You keep bringing a bunch of guys in here. I need winners in this locker room. I need experience in this locker room.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, this is a young football team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that a lot of the players today have that same, you know, gut
mm-hmm.
to them.
To the Michael Irvin point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The old-time guys, there were some guys that would really dig down and get it, and that's really what they brought in. They mm-hmm. brought in some guys that have been around.
Mm-hmm.
They're old school.
The Mitch Morse, the center.
Mitch Morse yeah. and Armstead mm-hmm. and, you know, even Darby and, mm-hmm. you know, those guys have been around for a while.
Yeah,
And you know, I'm sure that was the approach that he took. He's being honest. Well, you know, we need more of those guys in the locker room.
Okay, just do this real quick. Mitch Morse, playoff team. Gabe Davis, same team with the Buffalo Bills,
right.
Playoffs. Eric Armstead, Super Bowl. Darnell Savage, playoffs. Ronald Darby, playoffs. And so those guys do mean a heck of a lot, because if you boiled it down, as much as we don't want to admit this here in Duval, you say, hey, who are your leaders? Quick, who are they? Well, Trevor's a leader by default at the quarterback position because of how high he was drafted. Josh Allen proved to be a leader this
right.
year. Cam Robinson, I think you have to convince half the people that he is a leader,
right.
but he is. Who else? Foye Oluokun established himself as a leader this year.
Yeah, but not a real vocal guy.
No.
And Dewey.
Yeah.
But he can't. He can't. He's
right.
not a starter.
Right. He could be a leader on special teams. But yeah.
Yeah. But that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So to me, I think that was a very important message that he was sending to the football team as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need some veteran leadership in here yeah. to go forward. And it's not like the great thing. I keep saying this. It's not like this team was 3-14.
Right.
This team was 9-8. The thing that was so gut-wrenching about it was I think you have a different feeling if you're 9-8, if the losses were, you know, paired in with some wins.
Not five,
a loss,
last,
yeah. a win, a loss, mm-hmm. a win, a loss, a win, win, loss, than it is when you go 5 out of 6. And I'm sure that's going to stick. That sticks with him, yeah. With Doug, and he wants it to stick with all the players, yeah. as well.
Just think about it. It basically was a third of the season where they had a 99% chance to make the postseason.
Right.
That's when it started. 99% chance, December 5th, whatever, 4th, yeah. whenever it was, when they played that Monday night game against the Cincinnati Bengals. They had the number one seed in their sights and a 99% chance to make the postseason. Neither of those things happened.
Right.
All right, so let's get to a couple of other things real quick. Ryan Nielsen's the defensive coordinator. You documented it well earlier when you said, hey, there had to be changes. Now, Doug sounds pretty excited about what Ryan Nielsen's bringing to the table. And more than anything else, ladies and gentlemen, he's going to play 4 with their hands on the ground. At least that's the way it's going to start.
Yeah. Well, they're a 4-man front, mm-hmm. you know, and I think people, you know, even I text out, mm-hmm. here comes the 4-3. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's a 4-2-5.
Yeah, because they'll play more nickel than...
Exactly. And from what I've seen, and again, I've watched a number of Atlanta games. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched them all. Mm-hmm. So I have to do a little bit more research, but this is what I like to do in the yeah. offseason.
Yeah.
More so than watching an individual player. I like uh-huh. to see what people are doing.
Yeah.
But when the offense... From what I've seen, when they go base defense, mm-hmm. they're not 4 down 3 linebackers.
Okay.
4-3. Mm-hmm. They put an extra tackle in there. So they're 3 tackles and 2 stand-up outside backers. So it's a 5-man front.
Right.
Okay. Against, when I say base, I'm talking about a team that uses a fullback.
On first down.
On first down. Yeah. They might be 2 tight ends with mm-hmm. first down. Mm-hmm. If they think it's a run situation, they're going to load it up.
Okay.
And it helps them in a way because when they do that, they've got 5 men rushing the passer, too.
Okay. That's good, too. Okay.
So that extra tackle mm-hmm. or inside guy is replacing – the third linebacker.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a big
now
at the line of scrimmage.
When it's 2nd and 3rd down, yeah. a team could be in 2 tight ends, 2 wides, and 1 back, mm-hmm. or they could be in 3 wides or 4 wides. Now they're bringing in the nickel. They're okay. bringing in the extra defensive back, whoever it is, and he replaces that down tackle. And now there's still a 4-man front, but mm-hmm. they're a 2-linebacker, 5-DB defense. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing basically. And I think that, you know, it kind of warms my heart because in reality, they're a 2-deep secondary, which is what we were for many years with the Cowboys. Quarter defense, which I brought into the league. That's yeah. my only claim to fame.
That's his.
Now everybody runs it. But quarter coverage, mm-hmm. cover 2, they use a little bit of man blitzing and that type of thing. They're mm-hmm. an aggressive approach defense, so they do bring linebackers.
Right.
I'm kind of excited about what yeah, I saw in those films.
All right, so I don't know whether this might be another show altogether, but the difference in the 90s and into the O's when you were coaching that defense versus now, because you're facing a read option more than you are a pure pocket passer
right.
or a more dominant run game.
Right.
What's the difference?
The difference is that you have to be more disciplined in the secondary. You, mm-hmm. you can't just, you know, all of a sudden you think it's a running play. You,
right.
you take off mm-hmm. because they're throwing behind you, mm-hmm. you know, when you leave, if
right.
you're a linebacker.
Right.
So there's more discipline to mm-hmm. it. But it's a different running game.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing with their guys inside is they're deciding where they think the ball is going to go in the running game, and they're sliding their front that way.
Mm-hmm.
To give them an extra player.
Okay.
Over there.
Okay.
So there, you can't tell if they're going to be what I'd call an over defense mm-hmm. or an under defense.
Right.
A lot of it is based on where the tight end is and where the back is.
Okay.
Because 90% of it's shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, a bunch of 2 back.
Yeah, you had a bunch of extra tight ends,
guys under the center.
Yeah.
So now that's when you had the 3 linebackers in there. That's the 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
Then now it's evolved to the 4-2-5.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And rather than trying to put an extra linebacker in there when they're in base,
mm-hmm.
they're getting it done by bringing an extra down lineman mm-hmm. in.
Yeah.
That's the correlation.
That makes sense because they're still going to have to figure out how many guys that they have on this roster right now that are good enough to go with some kind of formula of a five-man front.
Exactly. And that's something that when we look at their roster right now and we talk about the draft, there is a possibility that they might take a defensive end that can also rush the passer.
Yeah, I'm all about rushing the passer. I'm all about knocking him to the ground. This team, even though like you can read certain stats, hey, the Jaguars' combination of Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker had more pressures than any other. I don't care. They didn't knock the quarterback down enough, all right? And they need to knock the quarterback down. And it needs to come from the inside as well as the outside.
Correct.
And so you might still be shopping for an edge rusher, even though you have used – 4 top 20 picks in the last 6 drafts
right
at edge. They still might be looking at edge.
Well, but, and that's a possibility.
Yeah.
But the one thing they have with Arik Armstead is he can play inside or outside. Okay. So in essence, if they did nothing, okay, at all, if one of those outside guys goes down.
Right.
Arik Armstead can move outside. He's just like Calais Campbell.
Okay, yeah.
And that was Calais Campbell for them.
He was very good that way.
Sometimes he was standing up, but most of the time he had his hand on the ground. Sometimes he moved inside and gave him a pass rush inside.
Right.
You know, that's the one thing that they, you know, might keep them. They might go with a defensive tackle that can rush the passer. You know, you just don't know whether or not they're going to – I'm all for going with a big man, whether it's an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. I want big guys. You win up front.
Yeah,
so.
And one of our guys, Mark Long, Associated Press, covers the Jags. He said on XL Primetime on Monday that he believes Cam's staying. He is the left tackle. Now, you have 3 guys that you like at left tackle, two on a rookie contract, one that's in his final year of that rookie contract, and Walker Little, and Cam costing you a fair amount of money, okay? He's in that $16, $17 million range as far as the cap hit is concerned. He's getting paid. And I don't know whether or not they can afford to get rid of Cam Robinson, but I also don't like the idea that they have 3 guys that are all starters and one of them's kind of riding the pine.
Yeah, and if they take another one, then they got to make a decision what they do.
Yeah,
you know, that's the issue. Other than the fact that if they get the right guy at tackle and they move him into guard, if they can play guard, then now I think, you know, they might be able to replace Sheriff or whatever, just age alone.
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen there. I think they're going to lean towards defense. But, you know, remember, Cam, if he stays, Cam and Little are up next year. So if they take a guy, if there's a guy there that they think is a chance to be a 10-year player, you know, one of the things they've done with free agency is they could play with the guys that they have right now, in my opinion.
They went out and got 7 starters, basically.
Yeah, and so it doesn't force them to take anybody, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Are there some positions that are more better, you know, more beneficial for them than others, maybe, but they may not be long-term the best situation they can get, or their upside of those players may not be as good as one of those offensive linemen are sitting there. So it really comes down to taking the best guy that they can at that position.
And I'm calling it 7 starters. That includes Devin Duvernay as a special teamer. And I definitely think that's a big deal. So, all right, let's just wrap this up, and then we're going to start looking, I think, after this, after everything came out, we're going to start looking at these draft picks, all the ones that we're talking about, whether it's an offensive lineman, defensive lineman, cornerback, wide receiver. There's a lot of possibilities. So we will start doing that next week.
Absolutely.
The countdown is on. Joe C. from XL Primetime, our head coach Dave Campo. Thanks as always to you for tuning in to Campo and Joe.
This presentation of the Campo and Joe podcast is brought to you by Bold City Heating and Air. Fast and reliable AC service.